Stocks closed sharply lower in volatile trading Thursday as investors shifted from riskier assets to traditional safe havens like bonds and precious metals. The S&P 500 lost 57, the NASDAQ shed 93, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed down over 545 points, settling to 25,052. After Thursday's close, the Dow has shed over 1,300 points over the past two sessions. I'm Andy Gersher. This is After the Bell, and joining us to talk about the wild ride on Wall Street, Jack Ablin, Chief Investment Officer at Crescent Wealth Advisors here in Chicago. Well, Jack, it's been a while since we've seen this kind of volatility as far as stocks go. Explain what's happening here.
Yeah, I think there's a general recognition that interest rates across the board are just too low. This is something we've enjoyed now for nearly the last 10 years, thanks to unprecedented central bank intervention in an effort, of course, to try to get investors to take more risk.
It appears that this is kind of a bit of a rebalance as far as interest rates go.
It is. I think one of the things we've gotten accustomed to is having these aggressively low interest rates. That's, of course, has spurred the risk-taking that the central banks have wanted. And now they're just trying to more or less take away that punch bowl. It's interesting that, President Trump is blaming the Fed for being too aggressive on rates. But if you really strip away, where the economy is and where rates are, short-term rates are still very low. You could point to, for example, the Taylor Rule, which is an algorithm that a professor from California had put together. And even if you don't buy every metric exactly, the Taylor Rule suggests that overnight rates should be 5%, not 2.25. And then in the longer end, historically, 10-year Treasury tended to track nominal GDP. Where's nominal GDP right now? 4.5% at the very least. And, of course, much higher than the 3.1% where it is right now. So I think overall there is a recognition that, we've enjoyed these huge discounts on borrowing, and eventually that's going to disappear.
Explain why the Fed needs to do this, why the Fed needs to get tools in the toolbox just in case we see another downturn.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. I mean, for the most part, we're driving around on our spare tire. And in the event we get another flat, we want to be able to have something in the trunk to be able to slap on the car to keep moving. So I think that having some firepower to be able to stimulate the economy from a monetary sense is vital. And right now, we've pretty much pulled out all of the stops with aggressively low interest rate plus roughly $1 trillion tax package. And so it's not a surprise that we're seeing, 4+% economic growth. So, at this part of the cycle, and I'm not complaining. I think the economy is great. But at this part of the cycle, we really should be trying to stockpile some ammunition to fight the next battle.
Also, trade disputes with China could be playing in the mix here a bit. Explain that dynamic and how that could put some pressure on the market as well.
Absolutely. That's really more of an earnings and economic pressure. Here we've heard a couple of companies, most notably PPG, a pretty ubiquitous maker of glass, often used in handheld devices and automobiles. They've already starting to wring their hands saying that the trade dispute's hurting their business. We're now entering the third quarter earnings season. Investors are on pins and needles waiting to hear if companies come through saying that the trade tariffs are either currently or are expected to hurt their business. Meanwhile, of course, China is suffering an economic slowdown as a result of these trade tariffs and other measures that President Xi and Beijing want to put in place. And that is putting, downward pressure on the world's second largest economy.
On days of heavy volatility, like we've seen the past 2 days, I imagine you start getting calls from clients. How do you talk them off the edge? And what do you tell them?
I think the good news here is this is really a classic correction and rebalance. I mean, that's all it is, because, you know, this isn't a house of cards. I don't see the foundation cracking. We have a very solid economy, as we've talked about, and credit conditions are still very strong. Lenders still have their checkbooks ready, wanted to lend money, and there's a lot of liquidity in the system. So I haven't seen any other evidence besides this, you know, rebalance in prices, if you will, to suggest that there's something more ominous going on underneath the surface.
Talking about lenders, banks kicking off earnings season starting tomorrow. Looking at earnings season as a whole, what do you anticipate, going over the next month?
Sure. So I'm expecting still some strong results out of the S&P companies. I think the banks should come through with decent results. They've fundamentally, at least, they've had things moving in their direction. Interest rates and the spread between overnight rates, the rates at which they borrow, and longer-term rates, the rates at which they lend, have widened. So that should actually feather their profit. And at the same time, you know, we want to hear about loan demand. Is loan demand rising or is it slowing, as perhaps some investors fear? So this is really going to be a critical period to hear, what's going on with liquidity. But I will say the one thing we can say about the banks is they're certainly willing to extend credit. There's no doubt. Their loan loss reserves are pretty solid. They want to engage, and that's good news for the economy and the markets.
That willingness wasn't necessarily there a couple of years ago.
Absolutely. So that's one of the measures I track, is lenders' willingness to extend credit. And remarkably, I would have expected it to have tightened up this late in the cycle, but remarkably, it's still there and it's still pretty strong. So that's one of the measures that I kind of latch onto to say, this is really just more of a temporary adjustment, one that I would say I wouldn't try to get cute and get out of the way and try to get back in, especially given the, embedded capital gains that most of us have in our stock portfolio. On the other hand, if you've got cash and you're looking to put that money to work, I still think there are probably cheaper days ahead with equities. So we just have to wait for the bond market to move back more toward fair value.
All right. If we see a little further decline in stocks, I'm sure there are probably some companies you've been eyeing. At what point do you move in and take advantage and start bargain hunting?
Yeah, I mean, I would say if I felt that, for example, interest rates were pretty well set where they needed to be, then I would look for the more of the solid dividend players, dividend growers, high-quality companies that can, pay but also grow their dividends over time. Even here, I think that, tech stocks will eventually become a bargain too. They're going to be down the most as rates rise, because those have the longest, if you will, maturity of valuation. You have to go a much farther out to ascertain their value than, say, something as simple as like a utility, where most of your return comes to you almost every quarter. So that's kind of what's going on there. And a lot of it is, again, is just pivoting off of interest rates.
That's Jack Ablin, Chief Investment Officer at Crescent Wealth Advisors here in Chicago. And I'm Andy Gersher for News Radio on 105.9 FM.